Our teams on the ground are monitoring the safety and security of refugees. We are also working to address the critical needs of separated children.
Moving in and out of Myanmar. It's Thursday, April 1st. No fooling. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a question of Chinese vaccine diplomacy or leverage. Indonesia hijab decree. Finding Philippine bats. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The U.S. State Department has ordered all non-essential personnel and their family members to leave Myanmar as the military's bloody crackdown against anti-coup demonstrations continues. The department's order updates an advisory issued just last month that allowed non-emergency U.S. personnel to leave voluntarily. Myanmar security forces have killed at least 512 civilians since the February 1st coup, according to the Assistance Association for Political Prisoners. Two more people were killed Tuesday as thousands of pro-democracy protesters took to the streets again. Three of the country's armed ethnic rebel groups, meanwhile, threatened the junta on Tuesday with retaliation if it did not stop killing protesters. The military expanded its crackdown by launching airstrikes against ethnic Karen rebels in eastern Myanmar in response to rebel attacks on military and police stations in recent days. The airstrikes prompted thousands of people to flee through the jungle and over the border into neighboring Thailand. Meanwhile, a huge relief operation is underway to support tens of thousands of Rohingya refugees affected by a massive blaze that devastated their shelters and other vital infrastructure in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, last week. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
An estimated 48,000 Rohingya refugees lost their shelters in the fire that ripped through parts of Kutupa along Balukali, the world's largest refugee camp, early last week. The camp houses some 600,000 Rohingya refugees who fled violence and persecution in Myanmar in August 2017. The UN Refugee Agency reports the Rohingya being sheltered temporarily on site with family and friends. This while housing and other vital infrastructure, including hospitals, learning centers, and aid distribution points, are being rehabilitated. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahecic says his agency and partners are distributing thousands of relief items to the refugees, and mobile medical teams are moving about to help those in need of first aid. He says more than 4,000 refugees affected by the fire are being treated for psychological distress.
Our teams on the ground are monitoring the safety and security of refugees. We are also working to address the critical needs of separated children. Since the fire, together with our partners, we've identified more than 600 separated girls and boys who have now been reunited with their families. Our partners are also establishing two child protection helplines and four unification help desks.
Mahecic says the Bangladeshi government has established a high-level committee to investigate the cause of the blaze, which is still unknown. To date, he says, 11 deaths have been officially confirmed, but he notes the whereabouts of more than 300 people are still not known. He praises the hundreds of refugee volunteers who are supporting affected families. He says they have been and continue to be critical to the humanitarian response. The UNHCR is urgently appealing for international support. It says it needs $5.9 million immediately to deal with the aftermath of the catastrophic fire. This is only a small portion of the $294.5 million it requires to implement its humanitarian operation in Bangladesh this year. So far, only 20% of that amount is funded. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The situation and stories are changing rapidly in Myanmar. Stay up to date with all the latest developments by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia, on Facebook at VOA Asia, and by stopping by our website at voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Myanmar's descent into chaos to further fuel Mekong drug trade, according to United Nations. BBC journalist leaves China over concerns for his safety. Pakistan partially revives trade ties with India. Afghan president offers three-step peace plan. The United States and 13 other nations concerned about WHO COVID origins report. Expanded coverage of these stories and so much more can be found daily when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. Turkey's announcement of new restrictions in the face of surging COVID-19 infections is putting the spotlight on Ankara's decision to rely almost solely on Chinese vaccines. With those deliveries repeatedly delayed, there is growing suspicion Beijing could be using the vaccines as leverage, as Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkey is rushing to deliver COVID-19 vaccines using a combination of local care centers and computer apps. People 60 and older are being vaccinated, but the country's vaccination drive is running out of vaccines. This is because China has repeatedly delayed delivering the vaccines that Turkey almost solely is relying on.
Turkey is entirely dependent on the Chinese vaccines. It did not become a party to WHO group. It's not on the priority list. And it's pretty much like I need to buy the Chinese vaccine, and China can delay the next rounds. So I guess you can say that that's a leverage.
Turkey signed a deal with China in November to buy 100 million doses of its Sinovac COVID vaccine. Meeting recently with China's foreign minister, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan raised the delivery issue, saying Turkey is still waiting for a February delivery of 50 million vaccines. The delay is fueling suspicions that Beijing is using the vaccines to press Ankara to extradite Uyghur dissidents living in Turkey.
The main question in Turkey was always like, why are we buying the Chinese vaccine? Because these Western companies are just next door. All our European neighbors are buying these and these, you know, vaccines or these brands. Why are we choosing this one? And it was a hard sell. Turkey is traditionally a country where you have unfavorable opinions with regard to China.
There are questions why Russia has not provided its Sputnik V vaccine to Turkey, given Erdogan's boasts of having a good relationship with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The controversy comes as Turkey is experiencing a surge in infections. The surge is taking place after the government controversially eased COVID restrictions, including allowing restaurants and bars to open. Erdogan even held party congresses across the country, drawing further criticism and fears over the consequences.
Istanbul is in the worst situation now. Our colleagues mentioned that most of the intensive care unit beds are full now. And also the health professionals will burn out. They are already burnt out. And with this new situation, this would overburden the health system.
Erdogan says restrictions will be reintroduced, but still claims Turkey will be ready for the vital tourism season. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
Happening now in Asia, protesters continued to demonstrate on the streets of Myanmar's largest city of Yangon on Wednesday, despite the military government continuing its crackdown. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's always nice to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for stopping by today. A recent case involving a Christian student being forced to wear a hijab in a public school in Indonesia is drawing criticism from rights activists. We hear more from Randy Wiksana as he reports from Jakarta.
This secretly recorded video of a man's confrontations with an official at his daughter's school went viral across Indonesia. The man asks why his Christian daughter must wear a hijab in school.
Is wearing hijab for girls only advisory or is it mandatory? To our school, it is mandatory, since it is written under school regulation.
After a public outcry, the Ministers of Education, Religious Affairs and Domestic Affairs issued a joint decree prohibiting public schools from imposing religious-based dress codes on students' uniforms.
Because the rights lie on each individual, on teachers, students, and of course, through their parents' approval. Local governments and schools are not allowed to mandate nor forbid the use of religious attributes on school uniform. This is the very essence of the joint ministerial decree.
A recent Human Rights Watch report on Indonesia cited discriminatory regulations and social pressure on women and girls to wear the hijab not only in schools, but also within the civil service, and even for the general public to receive service at government offices. The rights group says since 2011, local governments have issued more than 60 regulations on women's dress codes.
Hijab regulations are abusing freedom of religion. Children should be free from bullying. Children should be free from intolerance.
With the largest Muslim populations in the world, Indonesia remains by law a secular country, and mandatory hijab requirements were only left in place for Aceh, the autonomous region which imposes Sharia law. In other areas, wearing the hijab remains controversial. The Indonesian Child Protection Commission has pressed for children to be made more aware about the importance of personal choice in how they dress.
Let wearing hijab be optional for children. Options that is based on each of the children's beliefs. I think this is in accordance with human rights and appreciation towards women's independence.
Now advocates are raising the importance of enforcing the ban on mandatory hijabs for non-Muslims, as some local governments are refusing to accept it. Reni Wijaksana and Nabila Ganinda, VOA News, Jakarta.
As we know, research is ongoing into coronavirus origins, but it's thought that the coronavirus, which causes COVID-19, may be a zoonotic disease that first appeared in bats. A team in the Philippines is studying diseases carried by bats in hopes of preventing future pandemics. VOA's Arash Arabasadi tells us more.
Nighttime in the Philippines. A team of scientists using nets captures a wild bat which receives an impromptu medical screening. Scientists swab the animal's mouth, take measurements, and inspect the wings.
What we're trying to look into are other strains of coronavirus that have the potential to jump to humans. What are these areas that have the potential to be the ground zero for coronavirus infection?
Bat ecologist Philip Alviola with the University of the Philippines is on the research team studying bats and zoonotic diseases. The very nature of their work puts them at risk of contagion. They use the data collected from health screening bats to create a simulation model.
If we know the virus itself and where we know where it came from, we know how to isolate that virus geographically. So we can implement some restriction, travel restrictions. We can prevent city-to-city, province-to-province transmission.
The model projects how time, climate, and temperature may affect the transmission of disease from bats to humans. The International Union for Conservation of Nature says there are more than 1,200 species of bats and at least 78 of them live in the Philippines. The World Health Organization and others have been studying whether the coronavirus pandemic started in bats because the virus has a similar makeup to others that the flying mammals are known to carry. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
That's all the time we have for today's program. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online on our various platforms. Look us up under VOA Asia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank those who help bring the program to you every day, our managing editor Diane Gao and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.